This podcast is offered by Jikoji Zen Center on the web at jikoji.org. Our programs are made possible by donations from people like you.
So, welcome everyone here in the Sendo on this lovely, cozy, rainy day. And welcome everyone online. So nice to see you all and have you here. So yeah, for all of you who don't know me yet, my name is Annette. I'm from Switzerland, and therefore also my, let's say, different kind of or style of English, but I hope you understand me anyway. Otherwise, let me know. So yeah, I'm from Switzerland, and there is a Zen center called Felsentor. And one could say Felsentor is the younger sister of Jikoji Zen Center because of Vanya, who founded Felsentor in 1999. And he is Kobun's Dharma heir and one of the lineage holders. So that means that the Felsentor Sangha in Switzerland also is part of the wider Phoenix Cloud Sangha, which all goes back to Kobun Chino Roshi, who is the founding teacher of Jikoji. And his Dharma name was Hoon, which means Phoenix Cloud. So from there is this name of the Phoenix Cloud Sangha. Felsentor is located in a wonderful, beautiful landscape on a mountain, Mount Rigi. And it has a beautiful view over a lake. And there is a temple, a beautiful temple with a sendo. And there is a house community that practices Zen in this lineage. And they take care of the seminar house. So Felsentor runs also a seminar house. And there is also an animal shelter, which is very essential because one could say Vanya dedicated his whole life to protection of animals, animal rights. And therefore, the animals are also part of the Sangha. And I lived there for nearly 2 years and practiced and worked with the Sangha there. And when I came to the States and came here, it was really, or still is really nice for me to get to meet other Phoenix Cloud Sangha members. And I have been reflecting on Sangha, what it means, and even more so what it means to take refuge in Sangha. This is what we do. So we take refuge in the three treasures, which are the Buddha, the Dharma, and the Sangha. And here, for instance, after the evening meditation, we chant the three refuges in Pali. So we take refuge every evening in Buddha, Dharma, and Sangha. And taking refuge in the three treasures is also part of the precepts. So when we ordain, we vow to take refuge in Buddha, Dharma, and Sangha. So I would like today to share with you a little bit about my reflections on what it means to take refuge in Sangha. The word Sangha is Sanskrit, and it means association or assembly or community. And there are all kinds of Sangha. So in a way, this gathering can be Sangha too. Or there is Jikoji Sangha or Phoenix Cloud Sangha and so on. But in the end, in my understanding, there is one whole big Sangha that includes all beings. And taking refuge in Sangha for me is kind of a reminder that I'm not alone, that we are all together in this, whatever this is, and that we are connected, we are not separate from each other, and that we depend on each other. So just to think what it takes or took for me to be here in this building, it's kind of numberless, really endless elements. First, my life, that means my parents' lives and their parents and so on. And then to be able to stay alive, like food and all beings that are involved to produce this food, and all kinds of shelter, clothes, or medical treatment sometimes. And then how to get here, transportation. And now to feel this wonderful warmth, like the wood and Amanda who made the fire and the stove. And also this building, all people involved to build this building, the wood and the trees, the wood come or came from. And then the soil with all microorganisms, so the trees were able to grow. So you see, it's kind of endless. And I realized that this kind of depend on each other, it's easy for me to forget. It's kind of, it's always there. So I really need to reflect consciously about it to become aware. And when I came to the States in the beginning of May, I made another kind of experience, or it became really obvious how much I depend on other beings, on help, because I came to a foreign country, foreign language, even though I speak it, but there's still this language barrier, and I traveled quite a bit. I had to find out how to get there and where to take the bus, or needed somebody to give me a ride. And I needed places to stay. And I spent time at 3 or actually 4 different Zen centers. And every time everything was new again, new relationships to build, and everything was different, like the forms and to know where to go, what to do. And again, everything in English. So I really needed help with that. And indeed, I received so much help, and it was so lovely and so generous and such a blessing. But I must say, in the beginning, it wasn't easy for me to be in this situation, to have to reach out over and over again. I think because of this conditioning, not wanting to be a burden or not wanting to bother people, and they have better things to do. And so, yeah, I had kind of a hard time to deal with that. Until somebody helped me to kind of shift my perspective on this. And this was when I was at Green Gulch, and this person, she's one of the seniors there, and yeah, a person dear to my heart. So she helped me to see and to understand that we all need to be able to share and to offer our kindness, our goodness, our willingness to help each other. And if nobody's there to receive this, it's kind of hard to share, right? So in this sense, to reach out for help is also to give somebody the opportunity to offer their most beautiful gift of compassion and kindness and willingness to help. And I know it very well for myself, how important it is for me to be able to offer help or to be there for someone. It can be a person, can be an animal. And kind of interact or connect with other beings through compassion and through helping each other, as we all are vulnerable beings. So yeah, when I started reflecting on that, it was really helpful to change this perspective. And again, we are not separate, so this kindness or compassion that I offer to somebody, I receive it equally, and the other way around. There is a quote from the Dalai Lama I really like and would like to share. So he talks about this interdependence. From my own limited experience, I have found that the greatest degree of inner tranquility comes from the development of love and compassion. Ultimately, the reason why love and compassion bring the greatest happiness is simply that our nature cherishes them above all else. The need for love lies at the very foundation of human existence. It results from the profound interdependence we all share with one another. Again, the need for love lies at the very foundation of human existence. It results from the profound interdependence we all share with one another. There are studies that have shown that altruistic deeds or altruistic action are very important for our well-being, because they help to regulate the nervous system, because they activate the production of this happiness hormone, oxytocin. So this shows that it's actually in our DNA. We need each other, we are connected, and we need love, and we need to share love. And yet, there are so many conflicts in the world, in all kinds of sanghas, violence, all kinds of aggression. And maybe you know this feeling, or I may even assume that you know this feeling, that even if you are not involved in a conflict, it still has an effect on you. It kind of is painful, even though you are not really involved. And this is, again, because we are not separate, and the suffering of another, pain of another person, of another being, including animals, is also my pain. So the question arises, what can we do? And there is this Buddhist monk, Soto Zen monk, his name is Claude Anshin Thomas. And he is American, and he is a Vietnam veteran. And his story is he was very young when he joined the army, not even 18, so a kid, basically. And little after, he was sent to Vietnam to war, and yeah, experienced there all kinds of horrors. And eventually, he got injured, so he was sent back home. And his physical injury healed eventually, but of course he was deeply traumatized and struggled with life. drug addiction and all kinds of suffering until he met Thich Nhat Hanh, and Thich Nhat Hanh helped him to get over this trauma with the meditation practice and with the Dharma. And that's how Claude Anshin Thomas became a Buddhist monk, and he dedicates now his life to help to transform violence into peace. And he says that what we can do, or actually what we should do if we want to stop war and conflicts in the world, we should wake up to our own suffering and our own inner wars, which are related. So war or aggression is acting out of suffering. And so he says, I quote, "War is simply a collective manifestation of individual suffering. The task is to wake up to the roots of war, violence, and suffering in us, and to learn to live in a different relationship with that conditioning. I know that in any given moment, I have the capacity to act violently, and I make a conscious decision not to." So we all have this conditioning, and we all have our soul wounds and our sufferings, and therefore our inner wars. And I think a constant or regular meditation practice, at least in my experience, is really helpful to change to work on that conditioning, as it brings us constantly back to in contact with ourselves and with our suffering. And when we are connected with ourselves, we also feel the connection with other sentient beings. So that means not to turn away from our pain, even though sometimes maybe the impulse is ignore it, look the other way, but no, turn towards or bring our attention to the pain and suffering and meet it with loving kindness and compassion. So it can start healing and transforming. I really like this picture or metaphor that Thich Nhat Hanh mentioned. So he said that we should hold the pain, whatever it is, sadness or fear, grief, like hold it in our arms like a mother holds her child or her baby, and be there for the pain with kindness and compassion. And maybe some of you have heard of the Metta meditation, or the meditation of loving kindness, which also in my experience is really, really helpful to heal our own soul wounds, but also to feel connected through loving kindness. And I would like to invite you now to do a little experience of this loving kindness meditation. We don't have so much time as, normally you can do it maybe 15 minutes or half an hour, but at least a little impression. So I would like to invite you to bring your attention for a moment to your body and feel in what position you are here and if it's comfortable or if you'd like to adjust your position. And also bring your attention to your breath. Not changing anything, just be aware of your breath. And then bring your attention for a moment also to the ground, to the floor, its stability, and how you are carried and held by the floor, by the ground. And then receive this message of loving kindness. May I be happy. May I be happy. May I be safe. May I live my life with ease. And may I be free from suffering. And just notice what happens. And then think of someone that you love, that is close to you. And from your heart, you offer now this praises to this person. May you be happy. May you be safe. May you be free from suffering. May you live your life with ease. There's still your breath. There's still the ground that carries you. And then think of a being, can be a person, can be an animal, that you don't have strong emotions for, maybe because you don't know it very well or know them very well. And offer the same loving kindness for this being. May you be happy. May you be safe. May you be free from suffering. May you live your life with ease. And again, be aware of what happens. Whatever it is, everything is welcome. And then bring someone to mind that was challenging for you, you had or are having a hard time with. And remember this thing to as their sufferings. And from your heart, offer loving kindness to this person or this being. May you be happy. May you be sane. May you be free from suffering. May you live your life with ease. And then extend it more and more to the whole big Sangha, all beings, including yourself. May all beings be happy. May all beings be safe. May all beings be free from suffering. And may all beings live their lives with ease. Yeah, maybe you still can feel the ripples of this meditation while I continue speaking. So this is the loving kindness meditation. And of course, you can change the phrases, whatever you feel has the strongest effect or what you need the most, for instance. May I be peaceful, or may I be healed, may I be comforted, whatever you feel is, yeah, most effective. And now I would like to end with a poem that I like a lot. It's one of my favorites. And it's, in my understanding, it's a lot about why we are here, what are we doing here in this life, and about being connected and being there for each other. It is called If I Can Stop One Heart From Breaking by Emily Dickinson. If I can stop one heart from breaking, I shall not live in vain. If I can ease one life the aching, or cool one pain, or help one fainting robin unto his nest again, I shall not live in vain. I shall not live in vain. Thank you.
Thank you.
And now we have time for your questions or comments, sharings, whatever comes to your heart, mind, and of course also people online.
Shishin Ben has his hand raised. Ben, you can unmute yourself.
Yes, I thank you for your talk. It was very excellent. My Sangha does loving kindness all the time. And we have encountered somebody who really was against the, they did not want to send loving kindness to somebody that they didn't have, they weren't in complete agreement with. So what would you recommend in that kind of situation?
Yeah, thank you for your questions, a question, and for sharing it. I mean, I know.
Could you repeat the question?
Yes. And maybe Amanda, if my English isn't so correct. Mm-hmm. So this person in their Sangha, they practice loving kindness meditation. And some of the Sangha members, or one person, I'm not sure, it refused to offer loving kindness to a person they had a hard time with, conflicts. Mm-hmm. And what I recommend in this kind of situation. Mm-hmm. I think, first of all, I would acknowledge this person has a hard time to do this and to offer understanding, and that it is okay, that there is no, that the person doesn't feel pushed, and invite this person to investigate, maybe explore a little bit, what is this resistance and how does it make me feel? And again, no pushing, but inviting little by little, as long as it takes, especially in meditation, when we explore ourselves, who we really are, to maybe find this feeling of, right, if I I disconnect myself from this other person. And yes, of course, my mind tells me I have so many good reasons, but still, and I don't let flow this quality of heart, this kindness, it affects myself too. So, but it's kind of hard if it's just a rational concept. So in a way, invite this person to investigate and find it in their heart and feel the difference. And also invite them to see we all have our sufferings, and this suffering has a reason, comes from some soul wounds or karmic, whatever it is, and that this person is acting from suffering, and maybe find the compassion for this person, even though I have a hard time with that person. Was that understandable? Nodding. Thank you. But maybe somebody else has an idea. Yeah.
This is so much in the center of everyone's mind at this point. Forgive me. My name is Jonathan. I Miguel, who's cooking lunch, is my neighbor, and the things that you've chosen right on the nail head for me today, Sangha, loving ourselves. I've done different traditions and Tibetan Buddhism and the idea of treating our own suffering, welcoming our own suffering back, or not pushing away from our suffering. I'm getting to the point, actually, forgive me, and which was that there was a teaching around compassion for the world, compassion for ourselves, and something about where do we, you know, we all want to, you know, love the world, but we also are, I think of it as big mind and small mind or something like that. I'm going through some difficult things with my sister, a lot of button pushing. So for me to help her, I actually have to set boundaries and because I become sort of incapacitated if I get too close to her. And so it is this conundrum of how do any of us offer compassion kind of from the big mind. If I go, okay, I'm everything, I'm Avalokiteshvara, and yeah, everybody come on in. But for me, small little Jonathan, I have to, as you said, I try to open to her, open to myself. It's a, because there are real relationships which are really, I mean, they're all, I may not have the skill or the capacity. I don't want to become codependent with my sister, as it were, with someone who, if I try to save them, I will essentially destroy myself. So I may be getting too specific, but it's an interesting dynamic of how do we open ourselves to the universal caring for the, as you said, we are each other. Which for some reason makes me think of an old Arabic saying, which is trust in Allah, but make sure you tie up your camel. It's like, it's so, and we all want to be, you know, we're encouraged to be universal, but we're also small, we're both these things. So anyway, I struggle with it, you know, how do I, and when I do it, when I, I'm almost done here. There's, I can't remember her name, another Sharon Salzberg. She said that equanimity is the lubrication of compassion. Mm-hmm. And it's true. So I would be with my sister, you know, about to blow up or something. The equanimity is for yourself. It's for them, it's for everybody else too. But when you can do it, it works, you know, it helps. That's all really is that it's, because I know that we all feel like we're being encouraged by teachers to get, you have to love the, and it's like, meanwhile, I want to strangle my sister. Or something. You know, let me help you. And that's all, is to not forget what you've started with this, is that you need to take care of, to help. My father was a doctor who said, if you don't take care of yourself, you can't help anybody else. So it's, we all want to do that all the time. But anyway, something about scale and boundaries. And thank you all.
Thank you so much. Mm-hmm. And
thanks very much.
Yeah, thank you for this sharing. And I think that there is a reason why the metta meditation starts with ourselves and then little by little it goes. And if you start doing this meditation, maybe you feel it's good in the beginning just to do the part for yourself. And then maybe after, I don't know, a month or a week, you extend it to the person you really love and so on. And yeah, when you generated or cultivated this loving kindness, it may become easier to connect with a person that really is hard for you.
Mm-hmm. I don't mean to interrupt, but what Jonathan said and what you're saying, for me, when we were going through the meta, I was thinking of the person I really love and the person I have a lot of trouble with, and they were the same person.
Yeah. And there's the same person. Yes. And another aspect that arises from what you said is, what does acting compassionately really mean? And definitely doesn't mean all the time to just to be there and accept all kinds of treatments, you know? And there are these Avalokiteshvara's pictures of is the Bodhisattva of great compassion. And there are also pictures or images of Avalokiteshvara looking really fierce or even angry or so. That can also be, it's kind of, it's enough, I don't accept that, to help this person to realize what she or he is actually doing. So yeah, thank you for that aspect.
It's me talking to me, saying, sometimes.
Just extend that about what made me think about boundaries, and most importantly, perhaps know how does all this work, and then just to sort of underscore what I guess your name is Jonathan said, that it seems to me that we know about our heart, a lot of like science knows about heart by studying other people's hearts. So it's an organ that we all share. Our minds are an organ we all share. We have very much in common with everyone else. And what appeared to me is that it's a little bit different because the heart's not looking at the heart. So it's maybe, but the mind is looking at the mind. And that's where it gets a little tricky. But we share basically the same thing. So the worst atrocities that have ever happened in history exist in me.
What does atrocity mean?
The worst possible thing that a person can do to another person is in me, and just the opposite. But it is important, I think, to know boundaries. Raising children, you have to, if you're good at parenting, or at least practiced when they're screaming because they got to have that candy, they've been eating candy or whatever, or they have to have this toy. You'll have to say, no, this isn't the toy for you. It's for your birthday, boy. It's not your birthday. That's all. Thank you.
Thank you.
What we're getting at, I hear a lot of this, is this notion of self-compassion. And I have had a lot of trouble understanding what that meant, what it means for me. And it was recently explained to me that if you saw somebody in pain, you saw somebody having difficulty, if you saw someone with a dilemma, what would you do? You would comfort them. You would ask how they are. You would advise if they asked. But I noticed that when I'm the one with the pain or discomfort or letdown or whatever, I beat myself up. I wonder, why wouldn't I give myself the same compassion that I would give another person? And looking at it that way, even when dealing with difficult people, I need to stop and treat myself the way I would treat others. And that has helped a great, great deal.
I am a therapist, and in my experience or with my clients, so often I make this experience that people having a hard time to treat themselves with kindness and love and compassion, but of course they are there for others. Yeah, that is a deep conditioning, and when we can wake up to that and start changing that, I think this is a really important, essential step. Thank you for sharing that.
I'm laughing at myself because I'm trying. At any rate, there's an old saying, which is treat yourself as if you were someone you cared about. Which could go either way, but we'll go on the good side.
Or you should be your very best friend.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's hard. It's crazy.
And so I had a question on that. So we see this happening that either we don't treat other people well and we are kind of selfish and just want to take care of ourselves. And then this happens that the opposite thing happens where like we treat other people well, but we're not able to treat ourselves well. And so they seem to be kind of related. But my question is specific to the second part, that why does that happen? Why are we okay treating other people better?
Good question. I give you one answer I can think of, especially not the answer, and I'd be happy to hear others. But maybe some of you have heard this. I think Jack Kornfield was the one who talked about this, that so he was one of the first to go to Southeast Asia to learn the Dharma and meditation practice like Buddhism, and brought it back to the West, like to the States. And then he realized that this meditation practice, it didn't work because in the beginning, because it was brought here to the West and it mixed with a conditioning of self-discipline and not being enough, not being good enough, and have to work hard and all of that. And to do this meditation practice and this mindset, like urge, I have to attain enlightenment, that's totally not working. It's going in totally wrong direction. So they realized that first they had to work on self-compassion and self-care and kindness. And now the question is why? And maybe, but really maybe, that even though maybe we don't consider ourselves Christians, but still we were raised in the Christian context. And there is a lot of compassion in Christianism and of love. It's all about that. But there are also this kind of strange, I think, ideas of like, God, the one God who sees everything, and he decides whether you go to hell or to heaven. So it's all of being punished if I'm not good enough and if I don't struggle or work hard enough. That's an idea of mine, but I'd be happy to hear other ideas.
Susan? Susan, you can unmute yourself.
Thank you for your talk today. I appreciate your quest, your travel, your description of that experience of letting go of your usual comfort and putting yourself into those situations of vulnerability. And I have been to Jokoji several times, so I hope that the welcoming atmosphere there is useful for you. I'm intrigued by the use of metta and the way that it's helped me. And it was extremely important for me to start with myself. That was a real missing link. And I think perhaps what Jack Kornfield and others who were pioneers of that sort witnessed perhaps was the sense of interconnectedness, that sense of what we might call emptiness, that is essential in, perhaps in other cultures, but not in ours, so that a child growing up feels that unity. Whereas in our culture, we might grow up without that sense of complete connection. When we feel that connection, then we aren't so worried about our that issue of self-esteem that we have to teach in the schools so much, you know. So perhaps that is something that we're looking at now with our political divisions, is this lack of ability to see how we all are connected. So thank you. And I read in your bio that you do some somatic work, and I'm curious how that might, if you would speak to that and how that helps you with your the therapy you do and the teaching you do.
Yeah, so in my experience, it helps people to connect with themselves. So the body work is mainly helps, it's kind of a door to myself. Mm-hmm. So to reconnect with myself, doing it with the body. Brings me to back to whom I am, back to myself, and helps to get centered. And then step by step, we can also help to connect with deeper layers that are unconscious. But have a huge impact on us. And also to see what happens in our nervous system when we are traumatized, and how can we, through body work, help to rebalance the nervous system. Yeah. Okay, so thank you so much for being here and sharing.
Thank you for listening to this podcast offered by Jokoji Zen Center. Our Dharma talks are offered free of charge, and this is made possible by the donations we receive. Your support helps us to continue to offer the Dharma. For more information about Jokoji, please visit us on the web at jokoji.org.